Talking with Lauren Coleman. Sorry, listen to me. I knew I'd slip. I knew I would say that at least once. Sorry about that. Lauren Weinstein, a classic Coast to Coast guest and an ongoing contributor to this conversation that comes up all the time on Coast to Coast. Lauren was just on the other night, but I asked him to come back because of the story that broke this morning about Michael Cohen, the fixer slash attorney for the president, and the recording that supposedly is just one of many in the hands of the FBI. And it brings up so many aspects of how often we may or may not think we're being recorded and how often we might record other people. Love to get you in on that conversation coming up, but we've got more to get to before we do. So line up a call. We'll get to you next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Bonnet. So we'll get to some calls coming up in just a second. We're talking with Lauren Weinstein, Coast to Coast AM security and privacy expert. So, you know, I think this, where we're heading with this and where I want to see some of the conversation going here in the next hour is, what are the practical ways in which people are now addressing this ubiquity, as we discussed, of cameras and recording devices? And I saw this thing from Twitter. A guy had sent this out to me, and I'll pull it up for you in just a second. But he was talking about recording, and he said in Illinois, it's illegal to secretly record somebody, but it's not illegal to unsecretly record them. So he just makes it very clear, I'm recording you, and then it's okay. He doesn't have to get the other person's permission. He just can't do it secretly. And I thought, well, that's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about that either.
Well, let me ask you a question. It's sort of a tangent here, but related. We had Putin and Trump in a supposedly private discussion in Helsinki, right?
Right.
What do you think the odds are that a recording of their conversation does or does not exist, given the intelligence agencies of both countries, who knows what other countries? I have this image from there's an old movie called The President's Analyst, which is one of my favorite movies.
Was that Coburn? Was that James Coburn?
Indeed, definitely. Okay. Yeah, James Coburn. And all the intelligence agencies of all the countries in the world were trying to get the President's Analyst, and they were all recording each other for everything. And it just seems, just without any information to suggest that this is true, the thought that a conversation like that could take place without some kind of recording of it existing afterwards in someone's hands, whether it's American hands, Russian hands, somebody's hands, Finnish hands, somebody's hands.
Right.
Seems like a
highly unlikely.
Yeah, an unlikely proposition. Yeah.
You know, I think that what we know about the way that Russian intelligence has been conducting itself is, I would like to think that we have a recording of that we made, you know, surreptitiously. I'm willing to suspect that absolutely the Russians do, and who knows, maybe the Finnish did as well. So, I mean, maybe there are three different versions of it. I think what I heard, and the story, the part that was really disturbing, was how much of that conversation that took place was being shared amongst Russian officials. And we don't know what was said. And I don't like that idea that the more about a conversation with our president was being shared by Russians than we know. And we're supposed to be the more transparent of the two government systems.
Yeah, I guess it's a bad sign when they're showing transcripts on Moscow Channel 3, right?
Yeah, exactly. If that happened. But I think this is really, and then even the whole other conversation comes up about, all right, if we don't have a transcript, can we at least talk to the translator? But whatever the case is, again, it goes to show none of these things are worked out very clearly. And for the common person, you know, doesn't it make sense, for example, if you get pulled over by a police officer, for you to start recording what takes place as well as the police officer, then you don't have to worry about whether or not that particular police department is going to release their body cam. But there was a story in the news today about the police getting really touchy about being recorded by people that they were pulling over.
Yeah, well, there have been people who have been body slammed and thrown to the ground and handcuffed for trying to record law enforcement operations that they were completely in the right to be able to record. But this is sort of this is a situation we see with a lot of laws. You know, the being in the right doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to do it without personal repercussions.
Right.
So in these situations, so, you know, if you were stopped for speeding or something, and you pull out your camera and say you're going to record this, the odds are that most of the times the officer is going to say, go ahead, record it, see what difference it makes.
Right.
But occasionally, there may be a different situation. I think the game changer in all of this, really, just from a practical, technical standpoint, was when smartphones became so common.
Right.
As soon as you have a device that everybody is carrying, by and large, and where a recording, video and audio recording functions aren't anything special, they're just part of the standard equipment that everybody has, just like, you know, people are carrying wallets, then you have to assume that they're typically going to be used to record in all kinds of situations, irrespective of the letter of the law.
And then on top of that, of course, it's not just the recording of it and how easy that is to do, but it's the broadcast of it. You can, in one app, in any smartphone, you can be broadcasting somebody, regardless of their permission, on Facebook.
Right.
You go Facebook Live, you're not just recording it, you're broadcasting it in real time.
You could be doing Facebook Live, you could be using YouTube and doing live streams. There's all kinds of different ones. And one of the interesting ramifications of that, of course, that took a while to kind of sink in, was that if someone doesn't want you recording them, if they say, give me that phone, I'm going to smash it, by then it may already be too late because you've been sending it out live to the world before the phone was smashed. So that's another very important aspect of this. Recordings can be disseminated to very large audiences very, very quickly.
And
of course, that can be good sometimes, and it can be horribly evil sometimes.
But that's not even, you know, technically, and I know you know this, but technically that's not even really recording. I mean, you're in sending it in real time, you're broadcasting an event. It is also being recorded on Facebook, you know, on your page. But that's even, so there isn't even the extra step of having to get the recording and then disseminating it. It's happened, you know, it's happening so quick, it's not even technically a recording.
I believe that in most states, and I can't point at any, you know, specific litigation related to this right offhand without a bit of research. But I suspect that in states where it is not permitted to record without permission, most courts would find that broadcasting to third parties without getting permission would fall into the same category.
I don't think
the letter of the law is going to revolve around whether or not there's a digital recording being made locally, for example.
And maybe you're right, but you know,
I don't think you're going to get away with that one. I think people trying to do that are probably going to find themselves on the wrong end. Yeah,
I'm going to give you a challenge on that. Did you see the videotape of the waitress at Van Gogh's, kind of a saloon in Savannah, Georgia, who it's a fly on the wall camera, and as she's, you know, wrapping things up for the night, she's checking, you know, she's running her receipts, whatever, and a patron on his way out reaches over and gooses her butt as he walks out, right?
Mm-hmm.
He takes three more steps, she horse collars him, throws him down in a big way. I was so proud of her. This is so awesome. But I'm pretty sure they didn't get that guy's permission.
No, in
showing that videotape.
This falls into a different category, because that's surveillance video, and you will note that, as far as I know, there is no audio. Remember, early on I was saying the rules are different for video and audio.
Right.
And this is a case where there was no audio, so it doesn't fall into the situation that where most of those laws related to recordings and broadcasting would come into play.
And I wondered whether part of that was his face is never really clear. You can't really identify him. So I don't know whether that plays a part in it at all. But let me grab to John, who's east of the Rockies in Virginia Beach. Oh, John's gone. How about Jim in Longview, Texas, on Coast to Coast for Lauren Weinstein? Jim?
Hello, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Yeah,
you're talking to Lauren. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was wondering if I'm right or wrong. You know, I watch videos sometimes. There's college campuses. There's a rally or something going on, and there's always a student that walks up, puts their hand in front of the camera and says, "You don't have my permission to record
right.
me."
And right.
I've always believed that once you're in the public view, nobody yep. needs your permission. Is that true or not?
It's another one of these situations that's varies from state to state. In general, and again, I want to emphasize, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not giving legal advice here. In general, for example, if you were in a public gathering, for example, the way the law would be looked at, the way the situations would be looked at, would be very different than it would be if you were sitting around a table at a restaurant and someone was recording you without your permission. There are different rules that can apply relating to public events and public spaces. Yes. But
okay.
I wouldn't
okay.
count on Thank any you. Specific interpretation Wait. In any given case.
Don't go anywhere, Jim, because I got to know that I'll throw you some of both of you. We know this to be true. I'm sure you do too, Lauren. But in the creation of commercial media, or even in the news, to a degree, not for the news for in a news event, but this is where it gets weird. Like a documentary would be different. It is the responsibility of the creator of that content to get written permission from all of the people who are identifiable in those shots. So if you were making, for example, as you know, Jim just used that example of they're on a college campus and they're shooting a scene in a movie, they can't just take somebody's image without their permission. The other person would find it very easy to get an attorney and jam everything up. Now, I know this because I work with students all the time, and also my whole family's involved in this type of thing. And you have somebody who's assigned to getting releases.
Right.
And even people who are walking down the sidewalk, even somebody you get a release because you just never know what could happen later on. Now, it speaks to the ambiguity of it that there's no clear-cut answer, but somebody could cause a lot of trouble by saying, "You don't have my permission."
Right, and what you just said is the key. What you're looking at there in those kinds of situations is not necessarily a legal requirement. It's a requirement, for example, of the legal staff of the entity making the project saying, you know, they just don't want any trouble. You know, they don't want to open themselves up to any kind of trouble. So just get the permission and solve that problem.
But that brings us back to Jim's point. If somebody's walking up and actively saying, "I do not want to be on camera, get your camera out of my face," that they may have at least that much power, even though they are at a rally, even though they're at a public event, to be able to later on say, that person violated my space, I told them not to, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying they would win, but it's enough to get some leverage on it. It's not entirely a clear-cut answer.
Yeah, and it probably would also depend on whether they said that to a news camera,
right,
as opposed to a law enforcement camera, as opposed to a private individual with a cell phone.
Right. Does that help, Jim? Is that interesting, or is that like bring you right back to zero? all right. So we'll get more of you all. Go ahead and grab a line. We'll give you the numbers again coming up in just a minute on Coast to Coast. So Lauren, this again. Now let's talk about the odds specifics of this recording of a lawyer. Again, if you're recording things passively and you record all of the activities that happen in your office, just like the presidents in past have always done, right? That the president of the United States has recordings in every Oval Office, and almost every president has had these recordings to a degree.
Well, Richard Nixon is, of course, the
one who made it famous.
Classic case. You know, all except 7.5 minutes, right?
Right.
We never heard. But,
right.
But, you know, he set that up. It was a secret recording system. It was the most elaborate secret recording system. He may not have been the first to make recordings, but it was certainly very elaborate for its time. And in the end, it came back to bite him in a big way. It was a major, those recordings were a major reason that Nixon resigned to avoid being impeached. And what's happened after that in terms of presidents and recordings we don't really know. Now, back then, to do that, they had banks of reel-to-reel tape recorders down in the White House basement. Nowadays, all it would take would be, you know, a cell phone sitting on the table, or maybe right. even in the pocket of one of the participants, even in the Situation Room or the Oval Office.
Well, and hard drives being what they are, or thumb drives anyway, you could have a lipstick camera or a lipstick size, you know, recording device.
I have a little thing here that's just a it just looks like a USB flash drive, and it could record 400 hours or something like that. I mean, I use it when I'm in a meeting or something, and I say I'm going to be recording this meeting. I put it in the middle of the table so everybody sees that it's there. And then, you know, what did it cost? $12
right,
from
yeah.
eBay? It has eight gigabytes of flash in it. So this is the kind of technology we have at hand.
Right. What would you say? I mean, you say every time you tell people they're, I'm going to record you, and if, you know, just say, I want to record this, giving them the opportunity to either beg out, say no, demand that you put it away, or whatever. How often do people react to you when you start recording something?
I haven't had to do it that often. I'm thinking of cases where I was, you know, engaged in a complicated situation with a call center or something like that, you know, over a bill or something of that nature. And I said, look, I'm going to be recording this. When we continue this call, I'm going to be recording it just like you're recording it. I've never had any customer service rep say no. You know, I've never had them say, don't record me. I'm pretty sure that most of these companies probably have policies, you know, to deal with this situation when customers say that they're going to call. But this is the key thing. You always want to say that. You do not want to make the recordings without informing them, because they inform you when you call that the call is going to be recorded or may be recorded. So it's important that you do the same thing if you're going to be recording them. And
you
can do it in a similar way, but you should always do it.
Jim is in Newark, Delaware, on Coast to Coast AM on a wild card line for Lauren Weinstein. Jim?
Mr. Weinstein, I have a couple questions. Remember when 9/11 happened, George Bush was accused by the left of only recording people with Arabic names because of 9/11, supposedly. And then when the left gets in, they say, well, we'll be consistent. We'll record everybody in every mode of communication. And I'm wondering, is that still going on, and doesn't that violate one of the amendments of the Constitution?
Which one would that be?
Oh, no, there is one. There is an amendment about privacy.
Actually, there is.
There isn't one. That's the problem. Yeah, there isn't.
it's not really addressed directly in the Constitution.
It's kind of construed. Our quote-unquote right to privacy is one that was constructed through a series of Supreme Court decisions.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's a little bit of 4, right, and a little bit of what? 11 or 6 or something.
You know, there's nowhere. The key thing is there's nowhere you can point in the Constitution where it explicitly specifies a right to privacy. So you can start from that point and then extrapolate from there.
And I've never heard of a difference between the left and the right on that, but I'll take your word for it. Jim, let's go to Hannah in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. I know where Mansfield is. Hey, Hannah, you're on a wild card line with Lauren Weinstein.
Hi.
Hey.
In contribution to this conversation, I've been really interested recently in the whole idea that Facebook and other forms of social media could be recording you and following your conversation.
Through your passive camera or microphone on your laptop, for example.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a persistent, we'll call it rumor, that Facebook's mobile phone app does that. Facebook has repeatedly denied that they do that. I am strongly inclined to believe their denial for both legal and technical reasons. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But that is a story that keeps floating around. Yeah, I've heard it many times.
Hey, Hannah, do you have another thought on that you wanted to share?
Well, Hannah? It was just that I didn't put much stock by that until I was having a conversation recently in which I just mentioned a book on tape that I used to listen to as a child. And immediately, as in like later that day, I got an ad on Instagram for that same audiobook.
All right. That's very interesting. Hannah, I want you to hang on a second. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back to you after the break. We'll start there and we'll give the numbers. We'll bring everybody else on to the conversation and then we'll do open lines for the rest of the show. But more from Lauren Weinstein on the new privacy implications as of today on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So lots of people responding to our show. We're talking about some of the privacy implications that may or may not have been raised by this story about the FBI having a tape of Michael Cohen and President Trump. So we're talking with Lauren Weinstein about that in general, but I want to share a tweet at Deacon Punnett, by the way, if you ever want to keep in touch, from the real Captain Mohawk, who said back in high school in 1984, the start of my senior year, we read George Orwell's masterpiece, 1984. Back then, we thought it was just pure science fiction, but it's become a chilling fact that Big Brother is watching you. Well, I would argue it is less about Big Brother and a series of little brothers. It's not about the government and one unified government system watching us. I think it's much more about all of these private interests, all of these people with cameras, all these people with microphones. Everybody's got a different reason that they may be recording you throughout the day, that there is no one central bank. It's just, it would be impossible to find out all the different ways in which you might be recorded. So shouldn't we just conduct ourselves completely like we know we're being recorded at every second and then just feel free about it if we can, just, you know, live our life? Or shouldn't we be more proactive about what we're recording? So this got a call from the last half hour just before the break from Hannah, who is from Mansfield, Pennsylvania. I happen to know Mansfield, Pennsylvania, because they have a university there, and I had a very kind conversation with the people there about 3 or 4 months ago before I decided to go to Kansas State. And I never flew to Mansfield, but the offer was made, but I couldn't pull it off. But they were very nice, and I learned a lot about it. And I was curious whether Hannah was a student at Mansfield. And more importantly, and I asked her to hang on for the break, but she couldn't, is I was curious about what book she was talking about in front of her computer when, in some period of time afterward, it started showing up as a commercial on her Facebook page. They were looking like an advertisement was reaching out to her, although all she had done is just speak about that book. What I was curious about was whether she had any memory of having written to a friend about that or posting a message about that, or what the title of the book was and whether it was that common. You know, and then you kind of get into a coincidence, right? I mean, if you're talking about the hot book and suddenly there's an ad for the hot book on Facebook, okay, maybe. But she couldn't hang on. So maybe we'll never know unless she calls back and she lets Donna know who's answering the phones tonight. So thank you for that. And thank you for Charles and everybody else who's hanging on. We'll get to you coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, we'll get to open lines coming up at the top of the hour, but I've enjoyed this conversation so much with Lauren Weinstein, as I always have. And it's good to hear your voice and good to have a conversation with you again, buddy. When was the last time we shared the air together on Coast to Coast? Do you remember?
No. It's been years for sure.
Like a decade.
Could it be that long?
Or 5 years anyway. It feels like forever.
I'll go with four or five years. Yeah.
Right. Let's get Charles in.
Before we go to the next call, I wanted to say one thing about the Facebook.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The Facebook.
About what Hannah was talking about.
What she was talking about there. Usually, you brought up, you know, coincidences and other ways she might have mentioned it in writing that could have been different. More typically in this kind of situation, you're looking at what we call observer effect, which is that you only remember the times when those coincidences happen.
Right.
I mean, there's all the books and all the things that you talk about all the time, and there's no coincidence occurs, and it just passes right by, you know, like all the other millions of events in your life. And occasionally the coincidence hits, and you forget about all those other ones because this is the one that matters, and it looks so like such an amazing thing has happened. But from a statistical standpoint, and from the standpoint of the study of this, usually this is because we centrate on this. We're the observer, and this is the one that matters. But it doesn't mean that there's any causality. That's the key thing there.
All right. You know, here's an interesting. I'll pick up Hannah's end of the conversation. Were she here, is that you? This whole all of the Google bots that are out there, all the metrics that exist for Google to glean information. We know this was kind of out of control, and there's no oversight for it, right? We're not allowed to know. So I wonder whether it's even possible that she didn't say something about that book, but some friend of hers had posted it on her Facebook page. So it wasn't even Hannah that said it, it just somebody else did, and that was enough to trigger it. That we don't even know how sensitive these fetch robots are that go to get that data and then turn it into a little, you know, sidebar ad.
The models that social media firms use for ad presentation and such can vary pretty widely. I've consulted to Google. I give full disclosure on that several years ago. And really the kind of thing you're talking about is more in Facebook's bailiwick, because they're the ones that have had all these problems with the friends of the friends of the friends,
right,
and
right,
got into Cambridge Analytica and all these kinds of problems. And that's a very different kind of model than the way Google does things. So it's very hard to know without, you know, having internal information about Facebook, which I definitely don't have, what kinds of factors would come into play for that kind of presentation, of ad presentation, if we want to just put aside, for the sake of the argument, the strong possibility of coincidence.
Yeah. I did get Google poisoned, by the way, which was weird. You know, this whole thing where they decide what to pull up in a search for you, and in order to make searches quote unquote interesting, they will pull up obscure things that people have said about you on blogs or other things that no one has ever read and have no followers, but it, you know, according to them, it makes the searches better.
The fact, it's not a question of whether you consider it obscure or I would consider it obscure. A key factor in the way that Google generates search results is how much something is referenced, right?
Right. But they also creating that too. So if they pull something up more and they put it at the top of the fold, it's going to get more hits.
Yeah. And this is one factor in a very, very complex algorithm. But certainly a key reality is that not everyone can control or be happy with what their top results are going to be. Now you take that to its extreme, and you come up with stuff like the European right to be forgotten, which I consider to be a horrific government censorship scheme, which attempts to order Google. In fact, it does order Google to delete search results that point at, for example, newspaper articles that somebody says they don't want anyone to find. In other words, they're not actually taking down those articles. They're just trying to tell Google, don't help people find those articles.
Right.
So it's like removing index cards from the library. And the amount of evil that can be done with that kind of censorship, and that is government directed censorship, is really quite significant. It's something that really irritates me, and one of many problems I have with the way the European Union is trying to control the internet.
I get that, and I won't disagree with that. And I hate to quarrel on our first night back together. However, I'm going to dispute part of that, which was that the Google poisoning piece is that you could literally have like white supremacist websites that have put up really awful things, and they're putting that at the top of the fold, whereas you might have had an article written about you with 30,000 views on it, and that doesn't appear top of the fold. That's like nine spaces down. And I think this is the problem with that it makes it more interesting for them, potentially, quote unquote, you know, interesting for the reader. But is it fair? And in many cases, what they're promoting is they're sort of maintaining something which was at one point libelous.
Whether or not something is interesting isn't really the question here. From the standpoint of way algorithms like this tend to work, it's from the standpoint of what's going to be most relevant in terms of a search. And how you factor in all these sorts of things can be very, very complicated.
Right.
The problem is that for every example like yours, right, that you're naming right now, that,
yeah.
that you've described, which is a very, you know, compelling example,
yeah.
you have many more people who are very upset that the top listing that they're getting, for example, is about criminal activity or something nasty that they've done, or the way they, or horrible things they've done, that people searching on their name really should see first,
right,
to avoid being hurt themselves. And so you have all these okay. different kinds of situations, and obviously Google is dealing with things at an enormous scale, and you know you can't deal with it on a manual basis, and you know they're just are not simple answers to deal with this from a standpoint of any individual case. I definitely understand where you're coming from, and I've talked to people who have very similar stories in the past.
Yeah.
But I don't see, you know, with the experience that I have at this and the way I look at this, I don't see any obvious answers that would deal with your kind of situation without causing a great deal of collateral damage that would hurt other people in different situations.
You may be right.
I don't have a magic wand for that.
You may be right, but I'll tell you, my magic wand cost me $5,000.
You went to a reputation company, right?
I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so that's actual damage. I mean, that we would call that. But let's put it aside for a moment.
The thing about reputation companies, though, is that they're operating, you know, they're operating from the outside.
Right.
And they are basically using what amount to I don't want to get into a lot of, you know, the technical mumbo stuff, right? But you know, this it turns into an SEO war.
It does, but it's
a search engine optimization war. The art of trying to push results up to the top of search results.
But,
and there's white hat SEO where people do it in legitimate ways, and there's black hat SEO where people try to pull all kinds of tricks to manipulate search results.
We'll leave it there because I want to get everybody in. Let me get Charles in Elgin, Texas, who's been hanging on the longest, on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Charles?
Yeah. Hey there, Ian. Well, you know, it was real interesting what you said about your encounter with a professional in an office and how it turned out better because you recorded it. I thought that was a really good thing. I've noted it several times, several different people. I knew a lady in Austin. She was in a hospital with her brother who had been brought in because he'd been basically beaten up. It eventually ended up he was actually killed in a nursing home. And she behaved perfectly, you know, very well, and you know, when she went to take the case to court, basically the hospital, I mean, they completely lied about her behavior, about everything else that happened at the hospital. And had it been recorded, and had it been made, and who knows, it might have been recorded in the hospital, The other question is about ambulances, particularly what goes on in ambulances is not recorded, so it's not that ubiquitous as it maybe should be.
Well, that's an interesting point. I appreciate that, Charles. Let me get to Joseph, who's in Massachusetts and hanging on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Joseph.
Hey, good morning, Ian. Haven't talked to you in a while. I talked to you for a while, Lauren, and I just want to make a comment and ask a few questions about that lady that threw that guy down. I think that was over the top. All she had to do was say, I don't appreciate that. I just don't like violence. Being handicapped, you know, it's hard for me if I've been through violence.
I don't like violence either, but she was assaulted first.
But some people just go so far when they're feminists. Okay, my question is,
I don't think that's a case of being a feminist. Why is that feminist?
I don't know, but anyway, what can I use to record on my telephone, and where can I get one of those recorders? And I have a situation where I recorded in the hospital the first time. I did ask one time I recorded a procedure, and the third time I was going to record, they didn't object, but one nurse did, and they wouldn't let me record. And I found out, Warren, that hospitals are recording, and there's 250,000 to 300,000 people a year die from mistakes, and it's all
fair point.
I think
That's a fair point.
Are we talking about a regular mobile phone?
No, I have a regular phone. I have a mobile phone too, but it's not a special for just a flip phone. I have a regular landline and a mobile.
Get a smartphone.
Yeah, if you're running a smartphone, there's all kinds of apps that can record conversations to varying degrees in one direction or another or both. There's a lot of variability because of technical issues. For a landline phone, the easiest thing to do would be to get a little device that plugs in between the handset and the phone. You would unplug the plug that the handset uses to get into a typical landline phone. Put this device in between, and then that plugs into a digital or even an old cassette recorder or something, and that can be used to record conversations. Radio Shack used to sell something like that for, you know, $10 or something, but of course Radio Shack isn't really around anymore.
You got to find a Radio Shack.
Look on eBay. I'm sure you could find something quite similar.
I wonder about that. Let me get to a Cliff in Rolling Hills, California, on Coast to Coast on a Wild Card line. Cliff.
Yes, Ian, I tune in every Saturday night in the hopes that you might be on.
Well,
it's a pleasure to be here on Friday. I followed you immediately on your Twitter page, which I have to recommend. I don't think you need to ask Lauren about any wood you might need. It looks great.
Good. Well, we got you here.
I do have a question, but I want to compliment Lauren, too. Lauren.
Yeah.
I always like hearing you on the air. I'm glad he keeps you. He calls you often. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my question. If you're, well, I was driving down the freeway here in L.A., and I had to get off the freeway a little sooner than I thought. And so I had to cut this guy off, and he went ballistic, this guy. And he had his girlfriend with the camera. All you had to tell that last guy, oh, you have a camera. There's also a movie right there. Hit that button. Boop. Anyway, so that they were recording it. And the guy's totally out of control. It's his fault completely. He records his whole accident. And he's trying to sue me. Because it's my fault somehow, and he has it on his phone.
Well, real quickly, Cliff, I'm going to give Lauren a chance to respond to that because I got two other people I'm going to try and get up before the top of the hour. Then we'll go to open lines. But
yeah,
Lauren,
it's really difficult to respond to that because you know it, there's so many specifics in a situation of you know what's cut off when and whether it was a legal car maneuver or not. I just can't address it because I just don't know enough about the situation.
Bob is in Connecticut, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. Bob?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Morning.
Hi.
Okay. I have two questions. First of all, we all get this, you know, I call my insurance company sometimes or Medicare, whatever. And one woman totally berserk when I told, you know, that I told her I was recording the conversation. Said, if you don't shut it up, I'm shutting you down. So I just hung up, you know.
That's pretty rare for large companies. I mean,
yeah.
they generally do have policies that say, look, you're going to get customers who are going to want to record you. And when they say they're going to record you, you should just say, fine. So, but, of course, you're going to get in any large workforce, you're always going to get some people who don't, you know.
Follow the party line.
Yeah, the party line.
Second question real quick, Bob.
Yes, I do, actually. I'm running into, as everybody else right now, that oath problem on my cell phone where, let's say, I go to Yahoo, and then I got to give away, you know, everything but my firstborn.
Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that.
At that point, I would do this my second born, my daughter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's funny, but real quickly, Lauren, the status of giving away that kind of information online or even on, you know, something like that.
Right.
Lauren, your thought on that?
Yeah, I'm just saying they're particularly insidious in the way they're doing it. And I would take advantage of every opt-out, every information opt-out that, that they offer. They default to taking most of that information. Everywhere you can turn it off.
Yeah. Turn it off. Don't, thank you for not turning us off. And Lauren, thank you so much for jumping in. Loved this conversation. Always do. Maybe we got to revisit Google poisoning again sometime, you and me, because I think that would be very interesting. So in the meantime, keep up the great work you're doing here with George Norrie on Coast to Coast, who's got a night off tonight. Open lines coming up next. My name's Ian Punnett.